This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Benchmark Maps. What holds more potential than a road atlas spread out in front of you? Benchmark Maps makes detailed road and recreation atlases for each of the western states, including Alaska. And they're field checked for accuracy, as they have been for the last 23 years. So if you have your sights set on a road in the California High Sierra, you can have confidence that you'll get there, because Benchmark Maps have been there too. Right now, they're field checking Washington's wilderness, and this fall, they'll field check the Southern Appalachian Mountain Range for an exciting new title in 2020. Find their printed atlases and maps at your favorite outdoor stores, and if you order online at benchmarkmaps.com, use coupon code SHEEXPLORES for 20% off your order. That's SHEEXPLORES with no space. That's benchmarkmaps.com, coupon code SHEEXPLORES for 20% off your order. This episode of She Explores is also brought to you by Aunt Fanny's. Aunt Fanny's makes worry-free cleaning products and essential oil-based pest solutions. Used as directed, all are pet safe, kid safe, home safe. We get dirty when we spend time outside. Mud on our legs after a good bike ride or hike can feel super satisfying. Of course, we want to wash off the dirt before we climb into bed, but there's a lot from nature that we don't want to strip away. Which is what I love about Aunt Fanny's microcosmic line of hand soaps. They're probiotic-powered and formulated without harsh antibacterial chemicals, so your skin stays balanced with the good stuff after a great day outdoors. Learn more by heading to auntfannies.com. That's AuntFanniesCom. Before we get started, I wanted to ask, if you enjoy the show, I hope you'll consider rating us or leaving a review wherever you listen, subscribing to the show, or sharing with a friend. There are a whole lot of podcasts out there. Thank you so much for listening to this one. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores.
I think nature is super healing for me and actually for every single person. Just being outside is my kinesthetic meditation practice, if you will, whether I'm alone or if I'm with friends, it's a chance to connect with them on a deeper level. It's definitely my church, my haven, my favorite place to be. It just makes me feel good. So, you know, I've never, ever regretted playing outside.
This is Becky Marceliano. In certain ways, Becky's is a success story. She's switched careers and industries to work her way up to be a marketing manager at not one, but two well-known outdoor gear companies. Success feels like too easy a word, though. Like she reached a point and that's that. I wanted to talk to Becky because she can provide practical career advice, especially for those who are looking to make a career change. But I'm also attracted to her openness and daring in the face of big life leaps. A pattern in her life has been recognizing when she needed to make those big leaps, looking around, taking in the surroundings, and jumping in feet first. Playing outside has always been a part of Becky's life.
I grew up in suburbia, New Jersey, in a large family. It was a great place to grow up. I'm really thankful for that experience. New Jersey definitely has a pretty high level of hustle, and my parents have a pretty high level of hardworkingness. So I really got a great dose of that in my early years, which I'm thankful for.
How'd you make your way west?
Well, so I really just wanted to be more immersed in the mountains. My earliest outdoor memories were from playing outside, particularly with my dad and my siblings. I have four siblings, so grew up in a large family, and it was just one of the easiest activities to send us all out into the backyard. So I remember puddle jumping and catching salamanders. That really was formative for me to want to just do more and more things outside. In my teen years, I wanted to do these really cool wilderness trips, and my parents definitely empowered me to work really hard myself, babysitting and lifeguarding, to be able to pay for a lot of those trips. So that then led to my college years, and I went to University of Colorado in Boulder. I actually showed up for college orientation sight unseen, never having even stepped foot in the state of Colorado, but I just knew in my gut that that's where I wanted to be. So that was my first trek west.
Wow. So you saw like photos, you'd heard stories, and that drew you to Colorado?
Yeah, exactly. I had applied for schools all over the West, and I settled on that one, and off I went.
How'd your family feel about that?
You know, still to this day, they wish I was closer, and so do I. We are a really close family. We have, you know, family text strings that go almost daily. It's really fun. But it's definitely hard. It's bittersweet being so far away. My siblings all have kids, and so I don't get to see them enough. But they also understand that I'm probably not going to move back east, and I'm where my heart needs to be. So they're supportive for sure.
You studied art in college?
I studied art and environmental studies. And, you know, I've realized just recently I have three big passions in my life that have really led me to where I am today. And they've been like pretty deep rooted my entire life. Art and creativity is one of them. I just always in my life, I feel like need a creative outlet, whether that's painting or drawing or writing or even marketing in this time in my life. The second one is the outdoors and the environment. I have always just found strong connection there. And so, yeah, that's what I studied in college. And then I went on to teach environmental education for a little while. And of course, outdoors is a huge part of my life now. And then the third one is human connection. I just love it. I would say my intelligence strengths all lie on the social, emotional, intuitional side of things. And so, yeah, I just love the human connection part of being a human.
But when you're in college, you're just kind of exploring different things that interest you. You haven't put those things together yet.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely didn't realize that those were like my three pillars of passion at the time. I just was studying what was of interest to me. And then actually my first career out of college, I taught art education for 6 years, part in New Jersey and then part in Colorado when I moved back.
Becky spent 3 years back in New Jersey teaching art, spending time with her family, and getting a head start on her student loans until Boulder drew her back. I asked her what she learned from those 6 years as an art teacher.
I'm definitely really glad that I did it. You know, I went into art education to help others think creatively, to learn life skills through art, you know, like basic concepts, like how do I turn that watercolor set into that mountain landscape painting. You know, there's a lot of life skills that are threaded throughout the learning processes of creating art. And that's what I really loved. And, you know, I ultimately got out of it, I think partly because our public education system was becoming more and more test driven. And I even felt that in the art classroom. And I just wanted, that wasn't exactly what I wanted, how I wanted to teach. So yeah, but I guess a great lesson that came from that is just to hold that authenticity and truth in my own learning around that. I think the other part of why I left teaching is because I had my own itch, if you will, to do something new. You know, I always want to learn in creative ways and challenge myself in ways outside the box. And so I think the reality, too, was that maybe I wasn't that upset with teaching itself, but I was just ready to take the next big leap or transition in my life.
All along through college and while she was teaching, Becky had a foot in the outdoor industry, which is a lesson for all of us to diversify our experiences, staying open to other opportunities outside of your niche, whether or not you see yourself pursuing a different industry. One, it keeps life interesting. Two, you never know where it might lead.
Beauty of teaching is you have your summers off, and of course in college too. So yeah, I had a lot of bike shop experience, and I worked outdoor retail as well, guided wilderness trips for kids, taught environmental ed, did a lot of different things through all of those wonderful summers off during that time.
Did you find yourself gravitating towards one of those types of jobs over others?
The best job I think I will ever have in my life is guiding wilderness trips. I mean, they're just magical. You know, you spend a month in the woods with kids climbing mountains and rafting rivers and, you know, making s'mores by the fire. And it's just an incredible chance to like tap into them and their really influential years as a teen and just help kind of guide them and teach them and come into their own while, you know, amongst some incredible wilderness areas. So I'm not sure how a job could ever top that. That was my favorite.
So you did that in Colorado?
Actually, mostly in the Pacific Northwest and Alaska.
Oh, wow. Wow. So where exactly did you guide trips?
So my favorite one was in Alaska. We were there for a month. And then I led in Oregon for a few summers as well. It was the same company that I went on trips as a teenager. The company is called Longacre Expeditions. They're no longer in business, unfortunately, but it was incredible.
Becky developed good relationships at that guiding company, and she did the same with Deuter, a German outdoor company known for its backpacking bags and gear. Going from 6 years of teaching art to an entry-level sales and marketing position at Deuter might seem like a hard right turn, but her experiences and relationships led to it. How did the opportunity with Deuter come up?
So I was first actually a Deuter ambassador throughout some of my teaching years. They had signed me on as an ambassador because I was guiding trips and working outdoor retail and all of that good stuff. They were building the program. And I actually have kind of a far back German family connection to the brand, which was, you know, it literally started with a piece of snail mail from the CEO of Deuter's parent company many moons ago. So anyway, that's kind of how it began, and one thing led to the next. So I was already affiliated with the brand in the ambassador capacity, and the spring where I was finishing up a school year and just, you know, really looking to make a transition, a fairly entry-level job opened up at Deuter, and I thought, what the heck, why don't I just apply for it and see how it goes? It was a basic sales and marketing role, and I got it, and I thought, well, maybe this is worth the pay cut that I'm going to have to take from teaching, if that says anything. But I felt like it was my next good move and I was ready for it. And so I took that leap.
What was it like going from, like, you know, I assume working at a school, you're planning curriculum, and going from that to working in an office every day? What was that transition like?
Yeah, so my job at Deuter was the first desk job I ever had, you know, full-on cubicle world. Yet it didn't really feel too bad. You know, there's a lot of perks of working in the outdoor industry, and those definitely shine through as well. So it was a transition for sure, but not one that I ever really struggled with.
For you, did you go into it thinking that you would stay for as long as you did at Deuter?
I had no idea. I just knew that it felt right to be in the outdoor industry full time. And yeah, I just sort of let things unfold from there. I was really only in the role that I started at for less than a year. And then at that time, well, I found myself doing more and more marketing tasks because I just realized that, hey, this is kind of the creative field within business. And so it really suited my strengths and my passions best. So I was supporting our sales and marketing director and our sales coordinator with doing more and more marketing tasks. And then about 10 months into that gig, Deuter found some funding to create a marketing only position. And I fought really hard my way into that. And so I actually became the first ever marketing dedicated person for Deuter USA, which was a huge feat. I didn't really know what the heck I was doing. The people that I had been kind of mentored by at Deuter at the time, all three of them left within a month's time, right as I was put into this role. So it was definitely a sink or swim scenario with not a lot of paper trail of what we'd done in the past. So I jumped right in and took that on and then built the program from there. And it, you know, when I left after 6 years, we had a little team that was really incredibly smart and talented. And I was super proud of what I'd been able to build there.
What do you like about marketing?
I think I love that it always is changing. I love the human connection side of things, going back to that passion for me. I just love kind of figuring out how to connect with people, with messaging, with branding, and how to connect the dots of it all, you know? How do you take an event and a social campaign and tie them together? And yeah, just finding all those synergies. I really love that.
And you found you enjoyed working in an office in the outdoor industry. Like, do you have any examples of the kind of like work-life balance you were afforded or not always afforded working in the outdoor industry?
So yeah, the first few years I was thinking to myself, gosh, I've played outside a lot less than I ever have here now that I have this full-time year-round office gig, you know, it's kind of funny. But the incredible work trips that have since rolled out and continue to are what keeps me in the industry for sure. I mean, I've backpacked Yosemite. I just got back from a backpacking trip in France and Italy. I mean, it's pretty magical. So I'm really thankful that we get to be outside on some trips that help balance out office life.
Yeah. Yeah. I think sometimes people think about, you know, one, the outdoor industry is like huge. Like there's a lot of different ways that you can work within it. As you have already said that you've worked in at least three different capacities, like working in marketing, working as an outdoor ed guide, working at, I think you said it was a bike shop. So there are all these different ways to work in the outdoor industry, but then there's also a bit of like, it's still work. And I think sometimes people can romanticize it a bit when they're kind of dreaming about working in a different industry than they're currently working in.
Yeah, that's so true. And it's important to keep it all in perspective, right? I mean, you know, one notorious negative of the outdoor industry is that it doesn't pay the best. And that's true. So, you know, if anyone's looking to get into it, it's a consideration, right? It's all about pros and cons. And, you know, I always say I can't retire on backpacks and sunsets, you know, as great as those two things are, it doesn't quite work like that. So yeah, it's all about finding a balance in what's going to be best for you and your lifestyle and what's most important.
Do you have advice for people, though, who are interested in making like a move from the industry they're working in to working in the outdoor space?
For sure. I was lucky that my path was a progression for me, but that definitely doesn't mean it has to be for everyone. You know, I think my best advice is to be prepared for some hard knocks, that, you know, these less than desired salaries, be prepared for male-dominated spaces. Those are all very real things in the outdoor industry, but I'm also telling you that that's okay, right? You just have to be prepared to hustle hard. The outdoor industry is full of hustlers. It's full of people who literally and figuratively desire to climb mountains, right? So if you're gonna make it, you need to find a way to hang. My best advice is to be a good human being. I'm a firm believer that it trumps everything else. You have to kind of get rid of that mindset of being competitive with others and really do the right thing. Be kind, give back, remain humble. This is the basis of success, is to, in every single opportunity you have, take the high road, hustle hard, and you know, make yourself seen. So that's what works for me, and it can work for you too.
That's great. That's great advice for any industry.
Yeah, true.
We'll hear more from Becky after this. Have you heard of microgreens? They're the super tasty and nutritious seedling versions of leafy greens and vegetables. Hamama makes it easy to grow them in your house, apartment, even your adventure vehicle. I talked with my teammate, Laura Hughes, host of the Women on the Road podcast, about my experience with Hamama. Do you have a green thumb?
So my mom has a green thumb, but I don't know that that's been passed on to me, only because I've been killing about a third of the houseplants that come into our home lately.
I don't really have a green thumb either, which is what I love about Hamama. You can grow these microgreens year-round. It really doesn't matter what the climate's like, and you don't even need a ton of natural light to do it. So you could technically grow Hamama in your van.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, isn't that awesome?
I've been kind of drooling over the photos that you posted online of your Hamama greens.
I really love making like toasts because there's so much variety that you can make like a toast with. So like you just grill some bread in olive oil. You can maybe add hummus and then some Hamama greens. I did like the spicy daikon radishes, and those are like really great flavor. It tastes like a radish, but it's just the microgreens.
Ooh.
I also grew the broccoli microgreens. So those have a whole nother flavor. So it's really cool the kind of variety you can get from them too.
Wow, you've had like a whole microgreens garden just inside your house, which is really awesome.
Head to hamama.com to get started with a grow kit. Once you try it out, you'll find out how easy it is. You can also subscribe so you'll never be without delicious microgreens for your salads, fancy toasts, eggs. Honestly, I could just keep going. That's hamama.com, H-A-M-A-M-A.com. We're back. For this episode, we could focus solely on Becky's career. The arc from full-time art teacher who used her free time to pursue outdoor work opportunities to full-time marketing manager at a big outdoor gear brand. But it doesn't show the full story. It all sounds incredible, but it belies what was going on with Becky's health. She was experiencing what's known as a mystery illness. Before she tells us about it, I want to share how Becky responded to this question. Has it changed how you approach other people and not knowing necessarily what they might be going through too?
Definitely. Yeah, you know, everyone has their things, right? We all suffer in some way, whether that's disease or trauma or sadness or mental illness or a boss that sucks, right? I mean, there's so many things that can be struggles for us in our lives. And yeah, I definitely try to remain empathetic for what other people are going through, and also just try to listen and be of support for people when they're in time of need. You know, one of the best things you can do for others with invisible illness is just simply to say, I believe you, right? Because for so long, I was afraid to share because I didn't know what people would think. I thought maybe they would think that I was just making shit up. And I knew in my gut that that wasn't the case, but it also kind of plays mind games on you of like, am I really making this stuff up or is there actually something wrong? So I think, yeah, that's one of the best things you can do if you know someone that's suffering from autoimmune disease or some kind of illness that's not visible, is to just be on board with the fact that you believe them.
Becky's health struggles started over 10 years ago.
So I started to feel sick actually back when I was teaching. Back in about 2008, I started having my first symptoms. And the biggest onset of that was I kept getting these eye infections. My eye would just be like crazy inflamed and I'd have to go to urgent care. And I, you know, it'd clear up and then a month later it would happen again. And nobody could really figure it out. But that's where it all began for me. Where it went from there, I started seeing a lot of doctors and just tried to find as many answers as I could. It was a slow journey, and slowly we'd be able to get to the bottom of certain parts of my health case. But even still to this day, it's not all figured out. That's what mystery illness, chronic illness, invisible illness is. It's really tricky. So I made some good progress points along the way. But here we are 10 years later, still trying to figure it all out. To give you a little bit of context of what's happening, I have a nice little bundle of diseases. And with autoimmune disease, that often happens. They like to come in pairs or multiples. So for me, the primary culprit of my disease is actually stemming from mold illness. So mold can really wreak havoc on the system, similar to Lyme. They're both forms of biotoxin illness. So mold illness, you need exposure to mold, and you also need essentially a bad set of genes that doesn't allow the system to clear mold from your body. So over time, if you're more and more exposed, it just accumulates in the system, and in my case, my body thinks it's a foreign object. So it just is constantly sending out the sirens to try to fight it. And if there's nowhere for that mold to go, it creates a state of chronic inflammation for years and years at a time. So that's what was happening as an underlying theme for me. And of course, when your body is in such a state of chronic inflammation, it's just foggy. It kind of shuts down a lot of your basic body functions. My circulatory system was really tanked out, so exercise was super hard for me. Weight control was really stuck and stagnant for me. Brain fog, chronic fatigue, all of those things. So also, unfortunately, when your body is in that state, it can get tripped up by other autoimmune triggers and cause other autoimmune diseases. So maybe that flu that you had looks like thyroid tissue, and all of a sudden you end up with Hashimoto's, which is one of the autoimmune diseases that I struggle with. So the body just gets confused. And then I also have Sjogren's syndrome, which is in the lupus family. It looks slightly different than lupus, but ultimately manifests in a really similar way of attacking connective tissue. And that can be your bones, your joints, your gut lining, your skin, a lot of things. So yeah, so that mold illness, they think, caused it all. And then I'm left with the Sjogren's and the Hashis that are all kind of swirling together. So here we are 10 years later, just trying to figure out how to put all of those things into remission. And it's been a long, hard fight, a lot of hard knocks and hard times. But for the most part, I'm in a fairly decent spot with it and just trying to continually make progress.
It's a big question to ask, but like, what have you learned about yourself in those 10 years managing those chronic illnesses?
I think the biggest thing that it's taught me is to remain humble. I mean, it's the symptoms that I experience are thankfully not usually ones that put me totally down and out or in bed. But it's a daily grind. Every single day I have some kind of a symptom, whether that's eye discomfort or chronic fatigue or brain fog or any other number of things that I've had over the years, like joint pain and skin rashes and exercise intolerance, gut ulcers, all of it. And so, you know, when you're constantly just trying to keep your system in check, it sort of puts everything else in perspective and has really just helped me learn the lessons of humility. You know, like, it's going to be okay. You just need to keep trucking. This is a long-term game. And, you know, how do I just stay positive throughout every single day of it?
With an invisible illness, that's something that a lot of people don't necessarily understand. They're not able to wrap their heads around, and that can lead to people judging or an invisible illness holding a stigma. And something that you and I talked about is that it shouldn't. And why do you believe that?
Yeah, I love this question. I didn't talk about it for almost 10 years. Only those closest to me knew it for the first several years of this journey. I kept it hidden because honestly, I was afraid of it, or shall I say, I was afraid of what people would think of it. I was scared that I wouldn't be scheduled for work shifts. I feared my friends would think I was weird. I just didn't know what to do with it exactly, and I didn't want it to be part of my identity. But I came to realize that I don't need to be scared of it anymore. Most people actually find it really fascinating and are there to support me. You know, now when I go to friends' houses, they always ask, like, what can you eat and how are you doing? And they really listen. And I found that when I am opening up to them about what's going on with me and my health journey, they usually open up to their own life dealings. And it just has provided a platform for such deeper connection within my community, which I'm super thankful for. So, you know, the societal stigma is to show this perfect life, but life just isn't. So yeah, I started sharing when I saw others sharing their vulnerabilities on social media, and it helped me a ton with my own acceptance and confidence around my own. And so now when I share, people tell me all the time how helpful it is for them. And that's ultimately what keeps me going in that sharing circle. So yeah, there's a lot of stigmas these days, but I encourage everyone to find ways to share and find support, all while owning your own positivity around it, if you can.
One thing that you talking made me think of, the dynamic at times, like, that I've heard about within people who are into, like, more, like, quote unquote, extreme, like, adventurous sports. So, like, thinking about mountain biking or skiing or, like, doing a long day of more taxing, like, mountain activities. Was there also ever a pressure to feel like you have to, like, keep up in that mindset, like, living in a place like Boulder, Colorado?
Yeah, there always is, right? I mean, Boulder is such a crazy little bubble of uber athleticism.
Yeah.
I think I gave up a long time ago caring about where I fit into that spectrum. Like I said, I've always been an athlete, but never the best one. And so I do it not to hit my Strava numbers, but simply just to make me feel good of being outside.
That's great. I also have heard that there can be a pressure to have that kind of like work hard, play hard, and the playing be like the après ski beer or, you know, like everybody kind of celebrating what they just accomplished. Is there a pressure with that too, if you're trying to like manage your health and maybe not have that beer? Is that challenging too?
It's super hard. Every single choice that we make can tie back to whether it's healthy or not, right? And everyone's determination of what healthy is for them is different. But for me, yes, I have to be really careful about how much I drink and what foods I eat. And yeah, after that big mountain bike ride, like absolutely, I just want a plate of nachos and a beer, you know? And I can do that sometimes, maybe, but I do have to be really cognizant of what choices I'm making at all times. And that is the hardest thing for me, is being immersed in social settings where food and alcohol is prevalent, and I need to not always do what everyone else is doing.
Do you have a new appreciation for how you feel in your body, like when you are kind of feeling that kind of ideal health for yourself?
Definitely. Yeah. The days that are going well, I'm really thankful for. I guess every day I'm thankful for, but yeah. And it takes a lot of work to get there. Honestly, it takes a lot of continually making the best food choices, living a low stress lifestyle, exercising regularly. I mean, all the usual things, but in a busy life, those things are easier said than done to keep all in check at all times. And that's what it takes for me to really find those best days. But yes, when I can get there and maintain it, I'm super gracious.
We'll hear more from Becky after this. We all want our bras to fit better, and Third Love is dedicated to helping you find your perfect fit. They have 78 bra sizes in whole and half sizes, with bands ranging from 30 inches to 48 inches and cups AA through I. When I first bought one of their bras, I took the Fit Finder quiz. Actually, even before, when I was just thinking about buying one of their bras, I took the Fit Finder quiz. In just 60 seconds, it was really fun to learn more about the right bras for me and my bra shape. I have side set ones. There's also bell-shaped. There's a lot of different shapes for breasts. It's pretty cool. So it makes sense that at Third Love, they don't create new sizes just by scaling the existing measurements up or down. They fit each cup size on at least 20 different women with different body types and breast shapes to ensure its new styles are comfortable and beautiful at an I cup as well as at an A cup. Our bodies are beautifully diverse, and Third Love reflects that in the bras they create and the marketing they put out into the world. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they're offering 15% off your first order. Head to thirdlove.com/explore now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/explore for 15% off today. We're back. Before the break, Becky was talking about managing her stress, which is easier said than done. And recently, Becky had a few big life changes. If you can't tell, I just said those last three words in capital letters. Big life changes, all caps. They're the kinds of changes that you look back on as pivotal and also know about in the moment. Becky changed jobs. She left Deuter for a marketing position at Salomon. Becky changed states, from Colorado to Ogden, Utah, a mountain town just north of Salt Lake City. Lastly, Becky left a long-term relationship.
It's been all the feels is the best way that I can describe it. Transition and change they're just difficult, you know? It just throws off a lot of things in your life. But I knew that I had to do it. Most of 2018 for me felt really stagnant, and I could not quite figure out what needed to shift and change in my life, but I knew that something had to. Yeah, I just was working through that for myself. I could not crystal ball how it was going to play out. And then back in November, I ended a long-term relationship. That was one thing that I felt like, maybe that's it. Maybe that's the change that I need. And then right then and there and just within a span of a couple weeks, recruiters started calling. And that's exactly what I needed at that time. I had put in 6 years at Deuter and Ortovox, and I think maybe I was in that itch moment as well, just like I was feeling when I was ready to leave teaching, that I just was ready for the next chapter. I wasn't really sure what that was going to be, but I was looking for it. So recruiters started calling, and that opened my eyes to potential relocation and just new jobs and new places. And so we went through that process. I put myself in a full-blown job search at that point. Once the ball started rolling, I figured, heck, why don't we just really do this? And a couple months later, I got the job at Salomon and moved to Utah. And here we are. So it's been incredible. I've been here in Utah for about 3 months now, and it's starting to feel like home. The access to trails is amazing, and Utah is just a spectacular state in many ways. But yeah, it's been hard. You know, I will never forget the like my moving low, I will say. I was about 2 weeks in. My friends who had helped me move had left. All boxes were unpacked, and I was like sitting in my new home. Easter weekend, no family or friends around, on a Sunday in Utah with nothing to do. And I just was like, what the hell just happened to my life? But, you know, you have those lows and then you pick up the pieces. And I've been traveling a ton and exploring the trails here. And it's been just an awesome opportunity to self-grow and try new things and work for a company, Salomon, that I have always really believed in. The team here is super smart and a little bigger than what I've worked with in the past. And so I'm just super grateful for this chapter that I've just started.
Must have been a lot to kind of end. It was like you ended two relationships at the same time.
Gosh, that's such a great way to put it. Yeah. I mean, boyfriend relationship, that we've all been through that. And it's always so difficult. But yeah, Deuter and Ortovox, those were my babies. I poured so much of my heart and soul into the development there, and it was super hard to let go. But once I knew that I was moving, it was sort of this like crash course in letting go, right? It was like we'd have a meeting about whatever topic, and I'd pass it off to my team and then like cross it off the list and go to the next one. And 2 weeks later, I'd like passed off all the topics and empowered them to take it from there. So it was empowering for me too, although difficult.
Women have played a big role in Becky's outdoor and professional lives. When she was working at Deuter, she made a point to support women's organizations and companies like Native Women's Wilderness, Project 16X, and Women Who Hike. Salomon also just released a big women's initiative. I asked Becky why supporting women is so important to her.
The industry is very male dominated, and that's okay, right? But I think I have really found my niche working and supporting other women, just as many women have worked with and supported me. I think it's definitely a really incredible thing that happens when we can provide different spaces and different levels of support and environments and mentorship women to women. I have gained a ton from that, and it's something that I love giving back. I have really reaped the benefits of the Together We Rise, Let's Work Together to Rise All Ships type of mentality, and I really try to live that and help others see that as well. There's some people that are always going to kind of not quite get that. You know, they're going to live their competitive lives and just their view is that there's only one person that can get to the top, and I just don't believe that. I think that's not true. So how do we utilize each other's strengths to collectively make each other better? That is kind of my mission and my niche of what I've found in the outdoor industry. So yeah, I've been involved with a lot of women's groups and meetups. I actually started a Facebook meetup group for women that started in Boulder just to get us all together once in a while. And now it's definitely spread well beyond the Rockies, which is cool. And it's just about getting women together to help foster connection and networking and inspiration. So I believe that we all can come with various strengths and experiences, and the more we can learn from one another, the better off we're all going to be to help continue to drive forward equity, not just in the outdoor industry, but in society in general.
Are there any initiatives that you're working on right now that you're excited about that have to do with women's empowerment?
I am absolutely in love with this campaign that Solomon is working on right now. We just rolled out the first version of it for Spring 19. And the whole premise was to encourage women to break down cliches. So, for example, spa day or climbing the corporate ladder or a woman's places in the kitchen, and then asking for content to help show how they were really breaking that down in the outdoor space. And the campaign was wildly successful. It really pulled on the heartstrings. Everyone just seemed to really appreciate the message behind it, to empower women to go their own way and get out there and be authentic in the wilderness, however that looks like to them. And we'll be continuing to roll that into fall of 19 and even into spring 20. So while it was not my brainchild, I now get to kind of see it be executed in the North American market. That's a big part of what I'll be doing over the next year and a half. So I'm super excited that I get to be a part of that moving forward. And then personally, yeah, I'm excited to see where this meetup goes. And I just love connecting people, you know, and so we'll keep having those meetups for anyone that wants to join. It's Outdoor Industry Lady Leaders Meetup on Facebook, and you can join.
Oh, cute.
We just have little meetups every once in a while at OR and in Colorado and Utah so far.
So at the beginning of this episode, I mentioned success. That success could look like finding a love for marketing in an industry that fills you up. Becky's final thoughts shed another light on what success means to her and what it can mean for us all.
I believe in collective strength. I think everyone has unique backgrounds, experiences, levers to pull in their lives, different jobs and powers. And I believe that there's room for all of us to rise. I think our world is ready for us women to rise. We're supported more now than ever. And while there's still a lack of equity in many ways, one person's strength is limited. So it sounds kind of cheesy, but I can tell you that the collective spirit of raising women together has really worked for me. And if you want it to work for you too, I believe you really have to live it 100%. You can't do it half-assed. You need to truly commit to that and to live an empowered and collective spirit mindset. So success for me would be to shine enough to empower those around me to shine too. I think that would be my biggest win in life. So I assure you, you will feel empowered if you empower someone else, and I dare you to try.
Thank you to Becky for taking the time to talk. You can find her on Instagram at RJ Marceliano, which I've linked in our show notes, as well as her Facebook meetup group for outdoor industry lady leaders. Thanks to our sponsors, Benchmark Maps, Aunt Fanny's, Third Love, and Hamama. Discount codes and links are listed in the show notes and on the episode landing page. You can learn more about She Explorers by heading to our website, she-explorers.com, and support the show by leaving us a review wherever you listen and joining the She Explorers podcast Facebook group. With over 5,000 members, it's an encouraging place to share your outdoor endeavors, projects, and to connect with previous guests of the show. Music is by Josh Woodward, Lee Rosevere, and Kay Engel. Until next week, have fun out there.